B-Pod Studios.
This is Felger.
Felgstradamus.
And Mass.
You're not going to get anybody half decent for free.
Presented by DraftKings on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Agenda Free Friday here on Felger and Maz. 617-779-0985. You know the drill. Get to our opening takes here momentarily as we continue to wipe down. Jimmy, play the long version. Hey, so.
Good, you?
How we doing? Good? Good. All right.
Filthy.
Let's get to it. You can go ahead and release the hounds, Billy Lanny. Go for it.
Oh, I got a chubby for Charlie. Who needs porn when you have McAvoy?
There you go. 617-779-0985. Okay, so what do you got on Tiger? What do you got on Tiger being back?
Al Horford's an all-star.
Okay, there you go. Agenda Free Friday. It's one of my favorites. I do love the fact that the Midday Show loves to have their fun with us. I'm sorry, Zolak and Bertrand. I don't want them getting all upset on their way home that we don't refer to them by name. 617-779-0985 is the number here on Felger and Maz. Mike is out today. Jim Murray is alongside. Joe Murray is here for headlines. I am broadcasting to you from my home studio here. Murray and Murray are in the studio in Dorchester. Thanks to them for doing that. Let me just tell you quickly, Agenda Free Friday is driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, where car buying is always agenda free. Choose from new Acuras, Audis, Hondas, Toyotas, Volvos, and over 500 pre-owned vehicles. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com. And as just an aside, they are my auto dealer as well. So there you go. 617-779-0985. You know the drill on Agenda Free Friday. Jimmy Stewart, our producer, who is also in Dorchester. Jimmy, you can open up the phone line. Murray and Murray, which one of you two nitwits wants to go first?
Joe, go.
All right. My opening take is Pro Football Focus. Rank the Patriots wide receiving core 30th of 32 teams in the NFL. Obviously, if you look at it, you know, Julian Edelman, I believe he turned 34 years old today. So you got a 34-year-old slot receiver who has many hits in the league. Of course, Mohamed Sanu is still here, someone they made a trade for last year for a second-round pick. He was graded a 57. A 57. And then, obviously, everyone's banking on the year two jump for N'Keal Harry and, of course, an undrafted kid in Jacoby Myers. But where I'm going with this is, you know, a lot of this is banked on the quarterback and how he played last year. And now it looks like Jared Stidham or Brian Hoyer could be the next quarterback. But, you know, there was a report this week that Chad O'Shea – and the reason why he was fired from the Miami Dolphins was because it was too complicated for the Dolphins. Do you know where they ranked last year in touchdown rate in the NFL?
Better than the Patriots.
In the red zone, they ranked third overall. The Patriots were 24th. So forget about the wide receiving core being poor. I think it's all about the offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels. I think he can't figure it out. So, you know, there's a report about Brady and McDaniels somewhat having a beef. The more I look at it here is, yeah, maybe the wide receiving core isn't that great. They didn't go out and sign anybody. They didn't go out and draft the kid, which was one of the greatest wide receiver drafts ever. So the more I look at it here is, the problem I think might be on Josh McDaniels, who's still here, who didn't go and get another coaching job. And I know there was talks about him possibly going to Cleveland, but the more I look at it, it's not so much the wide receiving core. It's that offensive coordinator. You can't be 24th in the league and scoring touchdowns in the red zone. I think they want to blame it on the quarterback and think that maybe another quarterback coming in here like a Stidham might make things a little bit better. For me, this is a big year for Josh McDaniels, and I'm putting the heat on him. I think they're trying to put it on Tom Brady being old and not being a part of the system or liking the young guys. The more I look at it here, this is on Josh McDaniels to turn this thing around.
So I'm with you, Murray. I think that's a big one. It's a huge year for McDaniels, right? Litmus test year for McDaniels. So we find out really what he is. And what'd you say about Sanu? What was Sanu rated by Pro Football Focus?
57.
Yeah. Sanu sucked last year.
He did.
We all know it. They gave up a second round pick, and whether maybe it was an injury, maybe it wasn't. He sucked. He was awful. Jim Murray, go ahead.
All right, two quick things. Much like comedian Lenny Clark, who just checked in at the end of Zolak and Bertrand, I was fired up to actually see traffic on the way in, and not in a negative way, for the first time ever in my life. I was happy to see traffic because I think it's a sign that the people, like me, for the most part, have had it. Like, let's get back to it safely. Yes, safely. But let's go. Like, let's open it up. Let's open it up. So I was happy about traffic. The other, while searching for something in regard to sports today that I haven't been burnt out on at this point, you know, baseball players are dicks, when sports coming back, blah, 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 all the same kind of stuff. I found an article on The Guardian, which is a puke website I normally wouldn't give clicks to, but the title of this particular article gave me the sting. So I was like, all right, I'll fire myself up with my coffee this morning. I'll read this piece of crap. The title of the article was Michael Jordan Burn Bridges, LeBron James Builds Them. I know who I prefer. And long story short, it's a big piece about how this geek writer prefers LeBron James because he's a nicer guy. He was better to teammates and all that stuff that made me want to puke. This is why he likes LeBron more than Jordan, even though this guy, the writer, grew up in Chicago. And here's the thing. I'm Jordan all the way, not just because of how transcendent and great he was to watch on the floor, but for the very reason that he was a bridge burner and a grudge-holding a-hole, because that's what made him better than everybody else. The slights, the anger, the fire that burned inside him. Brady has it too, even though he doesn't show it as much. I wish he would. It's kind of unfortunate. But no matter what you do, I'm a big believer in this. No matter what you do in life, especially as someone that's a professional athlete or someone that works in the entertainment industry, anything like that, if you want to be great at it, you got to hate. Like, hate's okay. You got to have enemies, real or perceived, to help motivate you to be better. And that's what I would like. I just use this as my pulpit, the audience, to know, especially younger people who don't get to hear this kind of thing anymore in today's increasingly oversensitive, weak, and what is kind of getting to be a pathetic world, in my opinion. Some kind of hate, it's okay. It's healthy. It is. It can help motivate you. It should motivate you. Turn the other cheek? No. Spit in their face and prove them wrong. That's what Jordan did. That's why Jordan was Jordan. That's why LeBron is LeBron. And that's why LeBron will never, ever, 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 ever be Jordan.
I mean, competitively, me, Murray, they don't even compare. Really.
It's not even close.
They don't compare. Competitively, they don't. I mean, Jordan was an assassin. I told you, I think LeBron's a better player than Kobe Bryant, for example. But if you're telling me which guy's a better winner, again, not even close. Kobe was an absolutely, he was vicious.
Killers. Sports fans, you know who the killers are. Give me the killers all day long.
Oh, and Kobe was one. Now, again, I think LeBron overall is a better player. That's different.
I agree.
Than winner. I would take Kobe to win. LeBron can do more and is more versatile and all those things. I think LeBron makes his teammates better. I always thought Kobe was a little overrated too, but that's sort of a separate argument. But I hear you. In terms of the will, the competitive will, not even close between Jordan and LeBron. Not even close, if you ask me. So those are their opening takes. We know you have yours out there, too. Again, 617-779-0985. Dial in. It will be a standard or traditional agenda-free Friday format, which means anything and everything you want to talk about from the week that was. I'll just touch on some of the things we talked about were, and then I'll give you my opening take here as well. Obviously, we have developments in the NBA and the NHL. We had comments from Matt Duchene, player with the Nashville Predators, about players returning, which is now becoming, I think, really one of the forefront issues in all of sports on the landscape that is COVID-19 and whether or not these guys are going to come back and play. I think we are hearing more and more that the players have reservations. I actually made some calls this morning as it pertains to baseball, and I can tell you what I think is going to happen in baseball with guys who don't want to play. We can get to that a little bit later. We talked about The Last Dance, Jerry Reinsdorf, Michael Jordan earlier in the week. Tom Curran gave the Patriots an F for their offseason. We can touch on that. Stephen A. Smith had some comments on Jason Tatum that we did not get to, that we will get to today. Those were yesterday. And certainly Tom Brady was at the forefront of our discussion as well. And let me start here with Brady, because I got some emails from people. Certainly there were a number of people called late in the program yesterday, upset that we are, quote unquote, beating the crap out of Brady, and that taking out too much him and not enough on Bill Belichick. And I would tell all of you who feel that way and feel like that I have some sort of agenda to beat Tom Brady into the ground, go pound sand with a rubber mallet. Okay? Go pound sand with a rubber mallet. Brady has been a pain in the ass over the last couple of years. I think that is a fact. I don't think it's really disputable. Okay, so really, you can put that one in your pipe and smoke it. Now, as it pertains to Brady in the big picture, people who say that I'm ungrateful, and I think Chris Gasper is one of these people. He'll be here at 4 o'clock, as he is every week. I'll take care of his Louis Vuitton ass when he gets here. We'll talk to Gasper later. But this whole idea that we are, quote-unquote, ungrateful for what Brady has given the Patriots. I am not ungrateful. Tom Brady is the greatest football player of all time. He is the greatest quarterback of all time. But to me, again, I wouldn't even specify it by position. He's the greatest football player of all time. And if Jim Murray, and I'm putting you on the spot here, if I were to say to you that Tom Brady is the Michael Jordan of the NFL, and I'm talking about competitively, 6 championships, 9 Super Bowl appearances, is that an exaggeration or is that fair?
No, I think it's fair. I think it's a perfect comp, actually.
And I've said it a million times, and I mean it. On the field, Brady is the Michael Jordan of the NFL. So that means I don't appreciate him? I mean, that to me is idiotic. Okay, to suggest that you can make that statement and somehow be unappreciative of what a guy has meant to a city or to a region. Now, that said, Murray, if I were to say to you, and I admit that this particular thought was prompted in my mind from something I saw this morning on ESPN when they started talking about Brady versus Jordan. It's a common discussion. It's a familiar discussion. It's an old discussion. It's not anything new. But this part of it does bear mentioning, at least from my standpoint. And that is this. Jordan, the off-field brand. Jordan, the icon. And Brady, the off-field brand. Are they the same, Murray, in your mind, or no?
No, not even close. No.
Okay. So,
I mean, I put the Jordan brand, even though it's under the Nike umbrella. I mean, that's with Marlboro and McDonald's and Coca-Cola. I mean, that's as world-renowned as there is. Brady, like, I don't know. Do people in Japan know about TB12? No. People know about Jordan sneakers in Japan and Asia and other countries. Like, TB12, it's basically just known here.
Okay, and listen, I happen to agree with you, and maybe I'm just focusing on this because people have me pissed off.
Oh, people bitchy about this too? Because that's a fact. That's not an opinion.
So if we are talking about the cultural phenomenon, not the athlete, okay, the athlete, Jordan, Brady, to me, right there. Right there. I'd mention them in the same breath. Absolutely. The cultural phenomenon that was Michael Jordan. Please, Tom Brady's not even in the same universe.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick. Michael Jordan, you think he's cool? Like, does he emanate cool? Do you think?
Yes.
Does Brady?
No.
Thank you. Like, okay. I feel the same way.
Well, so that's at the core of it. And again, look, the Air Jordan brand is one of the, and forgive me if you said Air Jordan, Murray, when you mentioned this.
Yeah.
Air Jordan is like Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it is. Air Jordan is Coca-Cola. And so I don't know if someday Brady wants to be that off the field, and this is what TB12 is about, or this is what 199 Productions is about, or if this is what the man in the arena is about. I have no idea. Maybe that is what Brady aspires to be. Maybe Giselle impressed that upon him somewhere along the line. Maybe she had nothing to do with it. But if Brady wants to be Jordan off the field, if that's part of what the grand plan is, he's got a long way to go. Jordan, to me, there are only 2 people in my lifetime that I would ever mention in the same breath as Michael Jordan when it comes to cultural phenomenon, or cultural phenomena, if that's the plural. Okay, and they are Tiger Woods, and I would say Muhammad Ali. That's it.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to go back to the early 20th century and say Babe Ruth, I'd say no, it was a different world then, and baseball wasn't an international sport. But if we're talking boxing, golf, and basketball, those guys had international brand recognition, all 3 of them. Okay, and again, Jordan to me is on that level. Brady isn't in the same universe. So those of you who get all upset about Tom Brady, I get it. You think we're spitting on him. You think you're kicking dirt on his grave. And I mean that figuratively here in Boston and New England. And believe me when I tell you that I don't feel that way. I think Brady obviously has had as profound an impact on the Patriots and on New England as Jordan did on Chicago and the Bulls. Okay, for the most part. For the most part, I think Jordan was more Chicago than Brady was Boston, but that aside. But if we're talking about the brand, the magnitude of the persona, he's not in the same class. He's not. So I want to take one call because it is Agenda-Free Friday, so we'll sneak it in quickly. And then, again, your calls throughout the day. Chris Gasper will join us at 4 o'clock. Again, 617-779-0985. Estelle is in Maine. Estelle, are you the dare I say, elderly woman who called us the other day?
Yes, I'm 89 years old, and I've waited a long time for Brady. I think he's wonderful. He must have his reasons. I'm heartbroken, but I'll never fault him. I never fault him. I go back when the team was so bad that John Morris was a very close friend of me. He was a center, and I said, John, you were born at the wrong time.
Exactly.
And, yeah, he was, because he was an all-pro when the team stunk. I mean, before Kraft owned them, They played at Fenway Park. They played at
Harvard Stadium as well. And I'm going to let you go, Estelle. I appreciate the phone call. Okay, stay safe and be well.
How close were they?
So some of us remember how bad the Patriots were then. So I get offended when someone says I don't appreciate what Tom Brady means to the region. And yes, Gasper, I'm talking about you. So his email pissed me off this morning, Murray, in case you couldn't tell. 617-779-0985. We'll continue with your calls. The Brady discussion again. Everything and anything from the week. And we will also touch on developments in the NHL, which we could have a clearer picture on by the end of the night. And developments in the NBA, which we've had within the last 24 hours. So all that when we come back.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Colin Cowherd of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Maz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Maz.
You guys do a great show.
98.5 to Sports Hub.
That's unacceptable. I mean, if you go through the regular season and you have the most points, that's unacceptable. Right, I mean, they can't do that. Yeah. They can't do that to you. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, what did you play for then?
Yeah,
you understand what I'm saying?
I think our guys will, like Cam and Donnie, and ownership will argue for the best deal possible for us. I don't think they're going to want to see us, get hurt in this process. I just think sometimes when you have these circumstances where we're just trying to get some hockey back in, get playing in probably empty buildings by every account, and I think that was originally discussed. Now it looks like it's going to be automatic, so it's just for TV, which would be great to get back playing and get something on TV. But at the end of the day, you probably have to sacrifice for the good of the game. I guess that's will be the question put to the teams that are the field that I guess you could put Tampa. They've had a good year. Vegas on the other side in that category. If they kind of lose some of the edge of that regular season from what they've earned. So, but that's the way I look at it right now. I'm just hopeful we get a chance to play, to be honest with you. Cause I think, I love our chances no matter how it shakes out, but you're right. To a certain extent, it may hurt us the way we configure this thing.
It's Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy on earlier in the week, with Toucher and Rich. Talking about the proposal in the NHL, which is now coming into much clearer perspective or a much clearer picture than it was earlier in the week. And in fact, player reps from the 31 teams in the NHL started voting last night, and we could know the results maybe before the end of the show today as to whether to accept the format that has been proposed out there and return and play. And I think that this is, we're at a critical stage now in terms of these leagues coming back. Because we're hearing more and more that the players have doubts. about coming back on the ice and participating at all. In some cases, fear of the virus, which, again, I think in many ways is founded and justified. Some of the guys don't like the format. We played Matt Duchene for you earlier in the week. Duchene says he thinks that the Stanley Cup is one of the most sacred trophies in all of sports, and that anything that is quote-unquote gimmicky would really take away from that. And I think just the nature of where we are in the midst of a pandemic makes everything a little gimmicky. It feels to me like a guy like Matt Duchene doesn't want to play. The cut that we played for you there speaks to the format. And I'll tell you, since it's agenda-free, quickly, let me bring in Nolan, who's in a car. Nolan, what do you got?
Yeah, so I'm not really sold on the whole 24 playoff team format, just like Duchene. I think it's a little unfair, like Doug was saying a couple days ago, to the teams like Pittsburgh, who are right in the middle. Now, you look at the points. The Canadians finished right now. They had 70 games done. They had 71 points. They'd be going up against Pittsburgh, who's got 86. They're 15 points ahead of them. I think that's total crap for the Pittsburgh Penguins to get screwed by that. And honestly, I don't understand why they just don't go to a 20 team, 10 per conference. That way, at least you kind of minimize having teams, skating through and maybe get lucky in a series or two. I think it's...
Hey, Nolan, stop real quick. Nolan, stop for a second. Do you think the Bruins are getting screwed in any way?
I would say the Bruins getting screwed in the way if they're going up against a team, honestly, I do. I disagree.
Like who? Tell me who. Go.
I'd say the Canadians. If the Bruins.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what then. I'm glad you said that. Perfect. I set you up perfectly. The Bruins aren't going to play the Canadians. They're not going to play the Canadians. So this came up earlier in the week, too, and I thought, I had my fun with Murray and with Felger over this. But the way this thing is setting up right now, just so everyone understands it, and I'll give you just the Eastern Conference because that's all that really matters, and I don't want to confuse you by giving you too much information and including the West. So in the East, the top seeds, Boston, Tampa, Washington, Philadelphia, they will get byes. Go play among yourselves. We don't know who's going to be one and who's going to be two. Some of that could be determined, but those teams are going to get byes. They're not going to play. And then the play-in series will be Pittsburgh, Montreal, Carolina, New York, Islanders, Panthers, Toronto, Columbus. Okay? Now listen to this closely because it's important. The top seed would await the winner of the 8-9 series. That means if the Bruins are the number one seed of the East, they would play Toronto or Columbus in the first round. Murray and Murray, you guys okay with that?
Yeah, I have no problem with it. I just get back. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
There's no perfect way to do it.
Like, I don't care who the Bruins have to play. Like, can we just get this thing going? If they were the best team in hockey all year long, right? Best record, like, who cares who they play? Like, however you get there, whether it's Toronto, whether it's Tampa Bay in another round, like, let's just get into it. I don't know what the whole big fuss is about. If they're playing hockey, I think we should all be happy that they're trying to finish this thing off.
And Joe, I'm with you. I'm just saying that there are people out there, and again, I poke fun at Murray and at Felger about it. The Bruins, based on the format I'm reading, the Bruins aren't going to play the Canadians in the first round no matter what. There's no chance of that.
Right. They were talking about this on BST on NBC Sports last night. So that was refreshing. I was happy to see that. I know Columbus might be a bit of a bad matchup because that young goalie they have is pretty damn good. But fine. I'd rather them than Montreal and the history that would come in with them.
So if the Bruins finishes the top seed, which right now they are, again, they would play the winner of Toronto-Columbus. If they finish second, they'll play the winner of the Islanders-Panthers. So to me, that's not only is that fair to the Bruins, I think it's actually advantageous.
Same.
In a lot of ways to the Bruins. So the Bruins are going to come out of this okay, but I would pay attention to that vote. It sounds like Donald Fehr, who's the head of the NHL Players Union, Donald Fehr, it sounds like, has a majority willing to pass this proposal and to take the next step. But it doesn't sound like it's overwhelming. It's a slight majority based on tweets and reports that are out there, which means the NHL players, the constituency, the actual players who make up the union are split on this thing, and that is not a small issue. Certainly something to keep in mind. Tom is in Newton. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hey guys, Tony. I just want to respond to your point about, you know, Brady not being able to, you know, be as big as Jordan was in terms of a, you know, brand and so forth. I mean, I don't want to sound like one of these Patriots fans that, the, you know, defends everything Brady does, because it's certainly gone to his head in the last few years. I mean, you can argue it went to Bill's head as well with everything that's gone on. But I think you just have to look at the fact that the NFL and the NBA are just different businesses. I mean, the NBA, you've got 10 guys on the floor at a time, and only a handful of, you know, true superstars. Whereas in the NFL, by the time the summer comes, you've got like 90 guys on the roster. You've got, you know, a much, you know, more domestic, slightly older demographic. I just don't think it's possible from a business standpoint to be as big as Jordan was if you play in the NFL. What do you think? Thanks.
So again, so you're saying that the focus or the force rather of the individual. Maybe that's it. I mean, it's a good point. Brady is one of 53. Harder to have the same kind of impact in that sport that Jordan does in the NBA. And for that matter, Jim Murray, I had said that the only two guys I put on the same level as Jordan are Tiger Woods and Muhammad Ali, both of whom played individual sports.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I can't think of anybody else, too, that you would put on that list in terms of iconic.
Yeah, and Babe Ruth, you know, if you really want to go way back. But, you know, he was a cigarette smoking.
Yeah, just pounding hot dogs.
You know what I mean? Right, and again, largely an individual sport. I mean, you know, baseball tries to hide it as a team sport, but every confrontation really is one-on-one. I mean, it's not like someone blocks for someone or sets a pick for someone. You go up there and you hit against a pitcher. It's really that simple. So we're off and running. Again, Agenda Free Friday, 617-779-0985. We'll touch on the NBA scenario again. Played what Agent Wojnarowski said yesterday regarding what the NBA is looking at. We'll get to that after Joe Murray gets you caught up on the latest.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Mazz.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment. I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Mazz.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week. Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
If they do come back and play, what will they do? What conversations are they having about what the rest of the season and the playoffs might look like?
Well, that's a conversation ongoing between the league office and the Players Association about what's the format going to be. Regular season games. Are they going to bring all 30 teams back? Are they going to have a play-in tournament for the final couple seeds in the Eastern and Western Conference? All of that's got to be collectively bargained between the players and the league. Adam Silver wants to have seven-game series in the playoffs. He doesn't want to have shortened series early on. He wants to try to legitimize the champion as much as he can. I think the biggest conversation going on among players and teams are how many teams are going to have an opportunity to jump into the playoffs, into those 16 teams. What would a potential play-in tournament look like? Because Greeny, they've got to incentivize teams to come back to play their key players, to be motivated and to get fans' interest in this. And that could be at the cost of teams like Memphis and Dallas and Orlando, you know, 7-8 seeds, you know, who have, you know, have a pretty good distance between them and the rest of 9-10 and on in the conference seedings. And they've outplayed those teams significantly, but might have to still play more to get into the postseason.
It's Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN, the all-knowing Adrian Wojnarowski. And Woj outlining what really is a controversial issue for both the NBA and the NHL. So I want to clarify something I said earlier. Those teams that are on the bubble, and when I say on the bubble, I mean that in the 16-team playoff fields are the ones in the, call it the bottom third. So in the NBA, you heard him say there, Wojnarowski say a team like Dallas has a sizable lead over the next closest team, and Dallas would be in the playoffs under normal circumstances. The Mavericks may now have to play their way in with a team that is significantly behind them in the standings. NHL players are similarly agitated about this. According to reports out of both the NBA and the NHL, it is the most significant and hottest issue being discussed among players in terms of whether or not to accept these proposals coming back. My personal belief is that you also have a lot of guys that deep down don't want to play. That's my personal belief. Okay, so I suspect that issue is also coming up. Based on reports, the large majority of NHL players do want to return. But I wonder whether that number's a little inflated. So I just wanted to clarify that point, because based on what is being reported out there, the biggest issue concerns how many teams come back and how do they settle those final couple of playoff spots when both leagues come back. I also wonder whether there are guys who really want to play. And again, I focus on those comments from Matt Duchene of the Nashville Predators earlier in the week, and it felt to me like Duchene deep down didn't want to play when he said that there can't be any risk for anybody. Quote, any risk, which I just think is impossible. And Murray, I think you agree that there's no way they're going to come back and have no risk.
Yeah, and I think it just doesn't apply to professional sports. I think this is how society feels, at least in this country. You have people that are clamoring for, like, all right, can we get back to some level of normalcy, obviously safely, but, you know, we should get back, especially if you're a small business owner. And then there's others like, nope, everything's terrible, we can't go out, and I'm afraid. And I respect it if that's how you feel. So in pro sports, like, it's the same thing is going to apply. You're going to have some guys that are clamoring to get back onto the ice or the floor or on the field, and then others that are like, I'm good.
And I haven't asked Joe Murray about this. I should probably ask him too quickly. Joe, do you think there's any way these guys come back with no risk?
No, I mean, listen, we're all at risk. Literally, we are all at risk. So I think that some people will have the choice. I know we talked about it yesterday that, you know, people won't be punished if they don't come back or anything to that degree. I think the big hit, as we discussed, would be if a top player decided not to come back, right? Like, we know in golf, we talked about Adam Scott yesterday. There's more to that story today. Like, maybe there's other things involved. He's using the safety aspect of it. Maybe it's personal issues or something to that degree. But maybe it's the same thing for some players. Like, you know, LeBron James might be the big name. Like, if he didn't come back or play or ended up getting sick, that would be bad for the sport. But that's the only thing where I can see something changing is an outcry from one of those big names. Like a big name. Like if Patrice Bergeron said, hey, I don't want to come back, that'd be a big deal. You know what I mean? Oh. Maybe people would rally around him.
So, look, I raised this to someone in the baseball world that I'll get to in the next segment, because to me it's worth bringing up. And I just wonder now if things that wouldn't normally derail a player from playing, in other words, we all have personal issues and whatever, they come up during the course of the year. Normally you say, well, I got to go to work, I'll fight through it, and, you know, eventually it'll resolve itself. I'm wondering if those things now, when you mention Adam Scott and the PGA Tour, I'm wondering if those things now are more likely to get in the way and prevent a guy from coming back. That's all. Tommy's in Lynn on the return of the NHL. Go ahead, Tommy.
Yes, I think the NHL is going to come back, and I want to know if that impacts the Bruins. Does it impact them, Murray?
Which one?
Yeah, Murray, do you even want to answer that?
Sure don't.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. Kenny on the Cape on the Celtics and Jason Tatum. Go ahead, Kenny.
Hey, what's up, guys? Just disagree with Stephen A. I actually think Luke is better, but I think the Celtics are in better shape that they don't need a ball-dominant guy. Tatum will take over a game and he'll ISO when he needs to, but they don't rely on him like Dallas does, where Luka's taking 40 shots.
Okay, so we're going to let Kenny go, and I'm not sure how many people know what he's talking about. So I'll ask our producer, Jimmy Stewart. I know Stephen A. Smith had comments yesterday about the young players in the NBA and who certain people would pick to build the team around going forward. Jimmy, just give me a heads up when...
I'm good, Maz. I'm ready to roll it.
Okay, so Jimmy
about
has
a
cut.
Long cut.
Okay, so this is Stephen A. yesterday talking about young players in the NBA and who he would pick to build a team around.
I'm just a huge Jason Tatum fan. He's about 3 inches taller than 2 to 3 inches taller than Luka Doncic. He's clearly a much better defender. He's averaging nearly 20 points on nearly 45% shooting and nearly 40% shooting from three-point range, which is considerably better than the three-point shooting of Luka. We like to see those step-back threes that he has hit. But nevertheless, he doesn't shoot with the degree of accuracy that Jason Tatum shoots with from long range. And I just look at Jason Tatum and what he's asked to do and how he's just 22 years of age. Just 22. He's got a handle. He's got a shot. He can go to the hole. He can finish at the basket. Plus, he can defend. I love what I see from Zion. I love what I see from Luka. Both of those candidates clearly have the potential. But I got news for you. It would be a mistake to omit Jason Tatum from this conversation. He is right there, and he could overtake anybody. He's got that kind of skill, that kind of length, that kind of athleticism, that kind of defensive prowess as well. He's got the package, man. He's something special.
Jim Murray, true or not true that Jason Tatum belongs in the same breath with Luka Doncic and Zion Williamson?
Yes, absolutely, especially the way that he was playing, you know, that 2-3 week stretch before everything got shut down because of the pandemic. I think Tatum is a better shooter by a bit, especially from the outside. Doncic, for the bit that I have seen, I love him, but he's better at getting to the line. He can finish near the rim, and so he might be the better scorer, but the overall better player, I agree with Stephen A. Smith. I think that it's actually that it's Jason Tatum.
I think if you're talking about both ends of the floor, and if a guy hits his ceiling, means fully develops and reaches his max and everything, believe it or not, I think Tatum's the guy.
Yeah.
Okay, I think Tatum is the guy. He's bigger than the other two. He's more athletic than Doncic, who's a bit of a liability on the defensive end. Now, look, if you want to talk to me about the offensive end of the floor, then I would tell you that Luka Doncic is probably the most complete offensive player in the group. He can shoot better than Williamson. He passes better than Tatum. He can handle the ball. He makes other people better. I'll take Doncic on the offensive end of the floor right now and maybe even in the long term. But he can't defend, and he doesn't have Tatum's size. And Williamson's going to have, I think, a weight problem and a body problem later on. So, to me, Tatum absolutely belongs in that discussion and is one of the more appealing characters in the NBA when you're having that discussion.
Yeah,
I don't think Stephen A's wrong. Go ahead, Joe.
You know, you just said fully developed. Jason Tatum will be that guy when he develops. I think he plays the four. Like, that's a tough spot for him. He gets, at times, defensively, he struggles against fours. If we're going to throw out other names, people don't like Ben Simmons. If he could play to his potential and maybe somehow develop a shot. Like, hey, listen, you joke about it, but Jason Kidd, right? He couldn't shoot early on. And look at him at the end of his career. So I think if Ben Simmons can develop to be that type of guy, can also be that point guard. I know we're only talking about the two, but he's another guy to watch. And I still think Donovan Mitchell is a great player. Yeah. But again, Tatum at his potential and his age, I think he can still be great, but playing the four is going to be his most difficult challenge for him going up against bigger defenders.
He belongs in the conversation. There's no two ways about it. What I thought was the best rant of the week. We'll play that for you when we come back right after this.
Boston's home for sports. Felger and Mads, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Doing what they do best.
Now talk about soap opera.
Felger and Mads on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Why don't we hear another word now from the Player Association? What a disgrace. They knew right from the get-go that the letter and the exchange and the agreement that was made in March regarding the whole thing and the 50-50 revenue split, that they knew that it would have to be renegotiated and changed if there was a situation, and in late March, who knew that there would be no fans at the ballpark. One more time, I reminded him of Rob's comments at the outset, that playing in empty stadiums did not work for us economically. But I said, for example, that we might be willing to have a conversation about playing some limited number of games in empty stadiums if players agreed to reduce their daily salaries for those games. So we're off this now. This 50-50 revenue split is finished. I don't want to hear another word. It is absolutely, I don't want to hear another player moan and groan. I don't want to hear Clayton Kershaw and Dan Patrick. I don't want to hear Ian Snell or Blake Snell, whatever his name is down there. I don't want to hear Bryce Harper. I don't want to hear Boris. I don't want to hear another word. The union knew that if they were going to play games in an empty stadium, they knew that they were going to have to take a price reduction. They knew it. So all of them can go to hell. Go to hell. That's garbage. And I got Tony Clark telling the whole world, how dare Manfred try to jam a salary cap bias through the revenue spy during a global pandemic when they asked for confirmation in the original agreement what this all meant, and the commissioner's office gave them, and they said, yeah, that's what we thought, thanks a lot. And now since then they made a big stink about the 50-50 thing. Go to hell, all of you. Go to hell.
Christopher Mad Dog Russo on the MLB Players Union. Nobody does it like Mad Dog. I can't get enough of that one. Anytime Mad Dog loses his mind, I'm with him. I'll listen, is my point. I don't always agree with him on that particular take. I do. I thought that was the best rant of the week. But before that, let me just tell you, Murray, what do you think the single best thing, not rant, the single best thing we put on the show this week was, and I'm putting you on the spot here, Jim Murray, so I'll throw a couple of things out there.
No, like no, no. Matt, I think I know where you're going. You don't have to say it. I think it was Hardy's Puppets.
Okay, there you go. Murray, I appreciate that. So for those of you who missed it earlier in the week, Hardy did an all-timer on the Puppets. He really did. And again, the audio, as always, doesn't always do it justice, but we'll play it again for you here at the end of this segment, taking you right into headlines at 3 o'clock. It's out there on social if you want to find it. To me, some of the most creative stuff that Hardy has done since we created the Puppets, I don't even know how many years ago. So anyway, 617-779-0985. Mad Dog's rant on the MLBPA, on the Major League Baseball Players Union. Again, I happen to agree with them, but I asked this earlier in the week. I wonder how many baseball players really want to play. And this occurred to me, and I didn't raise this to you guys back there in Dorchester, and I mean this as Jim Murray and Joe Murray. But, you know, again, I'm sort of throwing it at you on the fly. But as I think about it, and you look at some of the playoff formats that leagues are throwing around, and again, in the NBA and the NHL, remember, there was no really radical realignment of any kind. They were in the middle of the season. And so they're trying to preserve as much as they can of the current structure. Baseball's proposals, if you remember, because they hadn't started the season, have been a little more radical. I mean, based on where teams are geographically, where they were training, there was a Florida scenario, there was an Arizona scenario for the teams that trained out there. Now we're talking about home stadiums, but the Red Sox being in a division with the New York Mets from the National League, and which seems to be the one that now has the most juice going forward. And I wonder if it's because baseball knows that some players aren't going to go for this. And so I sniffed around this morning a little, and this is not groundbreaking news of any kind, but I think baseball does worry about the fact that certain players are not going to come back and play, and they might be superstars like Mike Trout, who said that if guys aren't tested every day and certain protocols are not put in place, that he's not going to come back. Or that if guys leave the bubble, again, a guy like Trout, whose wife is expecting this summer, they're going to have to undergo a 14-day quarantine. The point being that baseball's schedule and system could be completely thrown in a state of disarray. And again, part of me wonders whether baseball wants to do it this way because they know that some guys aren't going to come back and play anyway. And it would be almost self-defeating in some ways to try to have a traditional structure to play in, if that makes any sort of sense, Murray.
Matt, I was just going to say, Maz, real quick, something I read today from Jason Stark of The Athletic.
Yeah, before you go on, do you understand my point that baseball says, well, if some of the best players aren't going to come back, then, you know what, maybe we shake up the divisions because we're going to have to make this more interesting because we might not have our best guys.
Yeah.
You follow me?
Yeah, you won't miss the star power as much because you have just, what, East, Central, and West, right? Like, that's all there's going to be.
Right, and the other part of it, Murray, is to look at it and say, if you wanted to keep the traditional structure but you don't have the traditional rosters, Well, then that's not going to work either, because then your season will have an asterisk on it. And so maybe the better way is to just jumble up the whole thing. But Joe Murray, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like baseball is these old timers who feel a certain way and the game is so pure. And Jason Stark of The Athletic today says, what if somebody hits 400? What if the Indians win it all? Like, now they're trying to protect like the records if there was a possible 82 game season. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's got something to do with it too, Maz, is that, you know, maybe like someone has a long hitting streak or something dips in the next year or someone does hit 400. Like, what does that mean for the game in general? And I wonder if there's a little bit of that there for the purists of baseball. And again, if someone big doesn't play, that's still a big deal. Like, if someone holds out, of course, and I know the ratings are already down, but like if a Mike Trout said he didn't want to play, that's not good for baseball. But I just wonder if there's a little bit of a purist factor there.
Well, so the purists are always going to think that, Murray, right? They're always going to think that, Joe, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I would agree. I think they're going to raise those questions. To me, that stuff has been long gone in Major League Baseball. Long gone. The steroid era destroyed all the historical records and everything else. Baseball sold out for it. They don't get to have both. If you're going to sell out for the steroids to bring the popularity of the game back, you don't get to preserve the tradition, too, at least not in my mind. As for those guys who don't return, I'll tell you what I heard about what's going to happen there, what will likely happen there, and there are no guarantees. Again, I'm just telling you what my little moles are telling me. First, though, here's Hardy's Puppets from earlier in the week. It'll take you right into Joe Murray's headlines, and when we come back, I'll tell you what I'm hearing about MLB's proposal, and we'll continue with your calls on Agenda Free Friday.
Murray, am I hearing your cats again?
No, those are the children outside.
So I was going to say, there's either kids or cats squawking in the background.
Oh, yeah. What's the difference?
Are the kids afraid of you, Murray?
I've had to scream at those children.
How old are the kids, Murray?
They're between like 6 and 10.
Oh, Jesus, Murray. You're MFing the 6-year-olds?
Yeah. It's bad enough I have to hear the birds chirping to wake me up. Try to wake me up at 6 when I'm trying to sleep till noon. Enough to make me want to just, you know, off myself.
See, most people, like birds singing and children playing, are happy. Like, that's a good thing to wake up to. Not
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, I can do without the birds.
Murray.
Especially, have you ever had a woodpecker on your house?
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap, that's like the worst thing ever.
So, Maz, how do you get rid of
the woodpecker hammering in the side of the house when I'm trying to get a couple of Z's?
How do you get the woodpecker out?
You got to hang, hold on. My wife's got the answer. Hold on. Shiny stuff from the windows. Something that would look like tinsel, but you hang it on the windows, and it does. It scares away the woodpeckers because something about the reflection freaks them out.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.